Okay, again, my name is Shandy Malcolm, and I'll be presenting my dissertation research. And this is, the title is Understanding the Parental Predictors and SDI Consequences of Casual Sex in Emerging Adulthood. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Seth Schwartz, Daniel Feaster, Guillermo Prado, and Marilyn Montgomery. They not only serve as my co-authors on the study, but they were also my committee members during the dissertation process. I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so I'm going to begin by talking a little bit about the group of individuals upon which this research is based, emerging adults. And emerging adults are persons who have graduated high school, but they haven't yet reached adult status. And Jeffrey Arnett, who is actually the psychologist who coined the term emerging adulthood, described five main features of these individuals. They're unstable. They are self-focused. It's all about them. They feel in between. They know they're not adolescents, but they don't quite yet feel like adults, mainly because they don't have adult responsibilities as yet. It's a time of possibilities. To emerging adults, the world is still the oyster. They can still be whatever they want and do whatever they want. And then emerging adulthood is a time of identity development. And this is the process whereby they find themselves. They find who they are, and they find their place in this world. And identity development, the process of identity development is very important because this is it's linked to exploration of various behaviors before settling down to a single life path. And this includes casual sex, which is the focus of this talk. Okay, cool. Casual sex is sexual intercourse outside of the context of a romantic relationship. So having sex with someone that's not your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife. And although many researchers have studied casual sex, the estimates of the proportion of emerging adults who actually engage in casual sex has been really inconsistent. So estimates have ranged from 30% to 75% for the proportion of college students who report sexual intercourse with at least one non-romantic partner in their lifetime. So there's various types of casual sex. But two main types have been described in the literature. You have friends with benefits, which are ongoing sexual encounters between cross-sex persons who do not define their relationship as romantic. And it's kind of like the picture shows. It's like a ticket for free sex without strings attached. But unlike the picture, it's not limited to friends. It's just known persons. The other main type of casual sex is hookups. And hookups are sexual encounters, usually only lasting one night, between two persons who are strangers or brief acquaintances. So it's kind of like a one-night stand. And this definition was provided by Elizabeth Paul in her 2000 paper. So we know that emerging adults are engaging in casual sex, whether it's 30% or 75%. So there's a great need to understand casual sex, both in terms of its predictors and its consequences. And we need to understand casual sex so that we can protect the health of, not only the sexual health of emerging adults, but also the physical health of emerging adults. And because of the differences that I explained in terms of friends with benefits and hookups, one includes sex with a stranger, the other includes sex with a friend, one is ongoing, one occurs on a one-time basis, there's a need to understand them in a separate context. So one of the predictors or potential predictors that have remained relatively unstudied is parent-adolescent attachment. And we know from past research that parent-adolescent attachment is linked to sexual socialization of adolescents. We also know that the relationship that a child has with their parents is predictive or indicative of later sexual behavior outcomes. And also we have the attachment theory. And this theory, it kind of emphasizes the centrality of parental attachments in shaping the entire lifespan of an individual. So kind of like a simplified model of the attachment theory is that parental attachments would cause persons to shape working models or expectations of themselves, which would guide later behaviors. And from both the attachment theory and past research, we hypothesize that parent-adolescent attachment will secure parent-adolescent attachment, will reduce the likelihood of friends with benefits and hookups. And we also hypothesize that this process will be mediated through relationship expectations. In terms of consequences, there's a large suggestion that casual sex is linked to sexually transmitted infections, but there's not been a lot of empirical research to link the two. So we know that casual sex is related to more sexual partners. We know that it's related to more concurrent sexual partners, and we know that it's related to not knowing the status or the STI status of the partner. And because each of these factors are related to sexually transmitted infections, we hypothesize that there will be a link between friends with benefits and hookups and sexually transmitted infections. So the overall objective of the study was to use structural equation modeling to evaluate a hypothesized model in which parent-adolescent attachment or secure parental attachment would reduce the likelihood of friends with benefits and hookups, and also that this relationship would be mediated by relationship expectations. But relationship expectation is not a monolithic construct. It is divided into, you can have two very different types of expectations. You can have the more emotional type of expectations and the more physical type of expectations. So we hypothesize that the relationship between parents, adolescent attachment, and friends with benefits would be mediated through romanticized expectations and sexualized expectations, and also that the relationship between parent-adolescent attachment and hookups would be mediated through romanticized expectations and sexualized expectations. So finally, we hypothesize that both friends with benefits and hookups would increase the likelihood of a sexually transmitted infection. Okay, so to accomplish the goals of the study, we used the AdHealth data set. And the advantages of this data set is that it's longitudinal, it's nationally representative, and it includes a wealth of information on adolescents. So this is the sampling procedure of the AdHealth study. The Quality Education Database provided a list of all the schools. About 27,000 met the definition of a high school. That means that they had an 11th grade and it had about at least 30 students. 80 high schools were systematically and randomly selected from that list, and then those high schools that did not have 7th grade were enrolled along with a feeder school, so that in total there were 132 schools that participated in the AdHealth study. All of the students in the 7th through 12th grade who in the 132 schools were then expected to fill out, complete the in-class survey. And then there was a stratified sample, a stratified random sample that were expected to fill out the at-home survey. The data set is available in two formats, restricted use and the public use. And I used the public use, or we used the public use in our study. And our study was limited to respondents who completed both wave 1 and wave 3, and who provided information on at least one unmarried, and I'm sorry, that should be opposite sex relationship or encounter. So for our study, we had about 3,300 participants or respondents, or the data set included 3,300 respondents. The average age at wave 1 was 15.8 years, and at wave 3 was 22.2 years. These are our study variables. Parental attachment was assessed at wave 1 with 10 items that measured the warmth, closeness, care, communication, and overall relationship quality perceived by the adolescent with their parents. Romanticized expectations and sexualized expectations were also measured at wave 1, and it was based on whether or not the adolescent expected certain behaviors in the context of a relationship. So romanticized expectations included behaviors such as kissing, holding hands, telling others about the relationship, and going out alone. Sexualized expectations included behaviors such as touching under clothes, having sex, discussing sexually transmitted infections, and getting pregnant. Friends with benefits was measured at wave 3, and it was defined as sex outside of a romantic relationship with a person on more than one occasion. Hookups was sex outside of a romantic relationship on one occasion with someone that they knew for one day or less. And for both friends with benefits and hookups, we considered the frequency or the number of partners within the past 5 years. Sexually transmitted infections, lastly, was measured at wave 3, and each emerging adult self-reported on whether or not they were diagnosed with a sexually transmitted infection in the past year. I'm sorry, in friends with benefits and hookups, they were considered in terms of relationship in the past 5 years, 5 years prior to the survey. So these are the results. 19.5% reported engaging in at least one friends with benefit encounter in the past 5 years, and 6.6% reported engaging in at least one hookup. Confirmatory factor analysis revealed that all factors loaded adequately on the appropriate scale, so that means that the scales that we picked measured what they were supposed to measure or what we thought they would be measuring. We had we showed metric invariance by gender and scale invariance by gender, which meant that the scales measured the same things for males and females. So this is what we found. Overall, the data fit the model well. The CFI was 0.98, and the RMC was 0.05. So for it to have a good model fit, the CFI would have to be 0.95 or above, and for RMC, it would have to be 0.05 and below. We found that secure parent-adolescent attachment was associated with higher sexualized expectations and also higher romanticized expectations. We found that higher romanticized expectations were related with fewer friends with benefits, and higher sexualized expectations were related to fewer friends with benefits. We also found that there was a direct relationship between friends with benefits and STI, so that the more friends with benefits you have, the more likely you were to have an STI. What we didn't find was a direct relationship between parent-adolescent attachment in either type of casual sex, or between relationship expectations and hookups, or between hookups and sexually transmitted infections. In terms of mediation, we found only that the relationship between parent-adolescent attachment and friends with benefits was mediated through sexualized expectations. So, in essence, our model was only partially supported. It held for friends with benefits, but not for hookups. We found an indirect link between parent-adolescent attachments and friends with benefits, but not between parent-adolescent attachments and hookups. And we thought that this was because friends with benefits was a decided upon action. It was more thought out. But hookups are more spontaneous, it's more alcohol-driven, so hookups may be a little bit difficult to change. We also found that friends with benefits were associated with STIs, but hookups weren't associated with STIs. And we kind of thought that it's because persons were more likely to use a condom with a stranger because they perceive greater risk with a stranger. And there's kind of research that supports this, that many people have this heuristic belief about sex where a known partner is a safe partner. And also we thought that friends with benefits were more likely related to an STI because it includes more sexual contact, which would increase the likelihood of exposure. So there were several limitations of the study. The adult data set is an old data set. It measured emerging adults in 2002, so that means the factors that are related to more current or contemporary emerging adults were not studied, or maybe a little bit different, I should say. We had secondary analysis, which meant that we could not handpick our questions. Some aspects were cross-sectional, which meant that we could not actually have a cause and effect relationship, or we couldn't find a cause-effect relationship. And also, there may have been confusion about sexual relationship questions. In the study procedure, they asked respondents to provide information on relationships that were important, sexual intercourse that were important in the context of a couple relationship or just sexual intercourse like that. And emerging adults may have only provided information on important sexual relationships, which would, by definition, eliminate some of the casual sex encounters. So perhaps in our study, the estimates of casual sex was a little bit less than actually occurs in general emerging adult samples. So from our study, despite its limitations, we think that one thing that comes up is that you should promote sexual responsibility about casual sex, either in terms of promoting condom use in casual sex or in terms of encouraging emerging adults not to engage in casual sex. We also thought that you should promote healthy sexual expectations and also help promote healthy relationship with parents, because we found that both of these factors are associated with casual sex. And so we think that future research should continue to disentangle the factors and the predictors and consequences in terms of friends with benefits and hookups, because as we learned from the study, there are two very different types of behaviors. Okay. Thank you.
Do we have questions?
Yes. I just have a question about the non-binding with the sex expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you guys did any analysis or if it's even possible to actually to look at the actual communication that happens, because at least in some of my work, it seems like talking about relationships is much easier than talking about sex between parents and kids. So.
Okay, communication between
parents and kids. So, given those.
No, we didn't. Yeah, we did not measure communication about sex between adolescents and parents. So from a different study that I did, communication about sex was actually related to attitudes, kids' attitudes about sex, not necessarily their expectations, but their attitudes specifically about condoms, their social norms, and also their control beliefs, whether or not they believe that they can control certain things in a relationship. But we didn't actually look at the relationship between expectations and communication about sex.
Did you look at parents' relationships with each other? So continued parents living in the same household, divorce, and so on?
Well, we didn't in our study, but one study that I found in the literature review was that parents living in the same household or living in the same household as your parents was associated with expectations as well. And this was a study, I think, by Kavanaugh in 2007, and that was the same study that I got the expectations, that used the same expectations, romanticized expectations and sexualized expectations. So from that study, we kind of formed our hypothesis that it's actually the relationship between parents and adolescents also impacted. But in the structural equation modeling, we controlled for several things, including demographic factors, but we also controlled for having biological parents in the same household.
Our next presenter is Joshua Rosenberger, and Joshua is in the Department of Global and Community Health at George Mason University, and his presentation today is the examination of group sex behaviors among men who have sex with men in the United States. Welcome, Joshua.